Man. So if you remember back to Genesis chapter 1, God creates the world. It's magnificent what He does. Everything that He makes, He says, is good. But it's not until He creates humankind, Adam and Eve, that He says that what He has made is very good. So you have the capstone of creation, if you will, is people. He says this about people. This is Genesis 1 and verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So we've talked at length about what is meant by made in the image of God. And one of the things that we've said about that is to be made in the image of God means that people, humankind, can reason, think, problem solve, create, innovate, live in loving and gracious relationships with one another. And so this is an incredible thing. There's also this call that is placed on humans that God creates. They are to rule over creation. To be made in the image of God means that humankind, they act as the representatives, if you will, of God and earth. They are rulers. And the word that I used in that first sermon when talking about humankind is that we as people are stewards or managers of creation. Now, we have seen this ability that humans have to create and innovate and manage. We've seen this at work in innumerable ways in even our lives, as a matter of fact, even this morning. I would imagine when you woke up this morning, your house was rather cool. Why was it cool? Because of this wonderful thing called air conditioning. How did people ever survive in Texas without air conditioning, right? Perhaps, at least if you're like me, I had a cup of coffee. As a matter of fact, I had two cups of coffee this morning. It was incredible how I got this coffee. This little plastic machine, I put a cup, just one little coffee cup under this machine, put a little plastic cup in this thing, put it down, pressed a button, and about a minute later, I had a cup of coffee. I did that two different times. I probably should have done it three times. Maybe you had eggs or something for breakfast this morning, beyond maybe a granola bar as you came this morning. I would imagine none of you went out to the back, behind, you know, back your property in your backyard, started a fire and put some eggs on a pan and had to allow this fire to cook your eggs. I'm going to guess that none of you did that this morning. Isn't that incredible? In just a few minutes, we can have eggs, scrambled eggs or boiled eggs or however you want your eggs. It's just an incredible thing. And think about driving here this morning. I'm just going to go ahead and guess that none of you took a horse to come to worship today. Now, if you did that, props to you for doing that. We got in a car, right? In just a few minutes, isn't this incredible? We got in a car, we pressed this thing called the gas pedal, in just a few minutes, we were here. And there was traffic lights that were ensuring that two cars weren't going the same direction or headed for each other. There is these signals that tell us where to go. I mean, in all of this, you get my point, right? You see this ability that humans have to create and innovate and manage, and it is absolutely incredible. So Jerry Seinfeld was doing this bit, and he was talking about what if the pioneers approached things like we do today. For instance, a lot of people go to Florida, right, for the summer. He said, what if the pioneers did that? They go down to Florida, they play some golf, they do some swimming, they go to the ocean. It's incredible. So they do all of this just for the summer. They come back, and they're telling their friends about their experience of going to Florida. He says it like this. He says, yeah, well, it took us 10 years to get down there. We had a few months there. It was great. The kids enjoyed it. We loved it. Very relaxing. It took us another 10 years to get back. There went 20 years of our life. We had a great summer, but now our lives are practically over. What if it were like that, right? Human achievement is amazing. Think of pyramids that have been made, some almost 500 feet high. A wall in China, 5,500 miles long. Neil Armstrong walks on the moon on July 20th, 1969. What an incredible achievement. Do you know that there are now people that are performing surgeries, even heart surgeries, using a robot, and they're not even in the same room. The doctor that is performing the surgery is not even in the same room as the patient. As a matter of fact, I've heard that it's even happening here. There's a doctor here in Austin that is doing heart surgery on people that live on the other side of the world. How in the world is this happening? Right? You see human minds doing incredible things. This God-given ability is a force. I mean, a force. It's powerful and capable of doing remarkable things to bless the world, and we have benefited from it. So what could go wrong, right? Genesis chapter 11 is where we're going to be. Genesis 11. Starts off like this, verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. Stop there for just a moment. I believe that this section of Genesis is not laid out chronologically. So I think that this here in chapter 10 actually precedes what we read about, or this in chapter 11 precedes what we read in chapter 10. What we read in chapter 10 the table of nations, and it talks about humankind being scattered amongst the earth and within their tribes and their languages. So I think that chapter 11 is telling us how the people were scattered amongst their tribes and according to their languages. So verse 2, as people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. This place, Shinar, is now referred to as Babylonia or Babylon, or was to be referred to as Babylonia and Babylon. It's nearby the Garden of Eden, which is interesting, in between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. It's interesting that what we're going to read about is taking place in a very similar location to the Garden of Eden. Verse 3. They said to each other, these builders, these people, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. By this time, bricks, baked bricks, had become a common building material for things such as the Babylonian ziggurats that were made, these monuments to gods and to human achievement. Verse 4. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll be scattered over the face of the whole earth. So they're going to build the city in this tower. And this tower is going to reach to the heavens, we're told. Now, the heavens is the domain of the gods, right? Or the one true God. And then the earth is humanity's domain. And so, in other words, these folks are going to build a tower that reaches beyond their domain. It's going to go up to where the divine belongs. In doing this, their hope is that their power, glory, and reputation would match the divine's power, glory, and reputation. And we see here the purpose of this tower and city. We see the why for this building project. So that we may make a name for ourselves. From the blueprints to organizing the laborers to do this work, to the workers actually laying the bricks, all of this work was to see that these people would reach the summit of humans' ability. This was going to be a sign of human work done without any regard for God. Now, we've been saying throughout this series in Genesis 1 through 11 that the big idea of these chapters is that it all starts with God. It all starts with God. One is to look at life, look at all that they do, all interactions, through the lens of faith. We are to honor God in all that we do. But then we say, all the way from Genesis 3 on, we say, well, wasn't really the case with Eve, was it? Take of the fruit. It didn't start with God. Or how about with Cain? Didn't start with God, did it? As he murdered his brother out of jealousy. Or how about all of the people whose only focus was on evil all the time, is what Genesis 6 says. Nope, it didn't start with God for them as well. Except, of course, for Noah and his family before the flood. And so this is supposed to all start with God, but what we are seeing with humanity is things continue to unravel for them. And we see it here in Genesis 11 as well. Instead of things starting for God, instead of building something that is going to be for the Lord's glory, they're doing something for their own glory. Verses 5 through 7. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. I love this. The people are attempting to build a tower up to the heavens, up to the dwelling place of God. And I love what it says. The Lord has to come down to see what the people are doing. It's almost like this, like God comes down and says, oh, isn't that cute? They're trying to build something to reach me, right? It's not going to work, not even close. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us, is this a nod to the Trinity? Perhaps. Go down, again, this idea of God going down to see what they are doing, and confuse their language so that they will not understand each other. God is concerned. So God acts. And he says, I need to do something because there is this potential that nothing will be impossible for them. God himself, who created humankind, he recognizes the ability that humans have, especially while they share a common language. Here's a side note here, but I think it's important as we think about the relationships that we live in. The ability to communicate clearly and freely sets people up to do great things. May we always work on being able to communicate clearly and freely with one another. Don't ever take for granted clear communication. But God slams the brakes on this project by confusing their language. And we ask the question, why does he do that? Why does he put a stop to this? Well, I think God's why is in reaction to the people's why. Remember back in verse 4, they're building this city and this tower so that they may make a name for themselves. The people were approaching this project with disregard for God. It was a godless project, if you will. Verses 8 and 9. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. God, and we see it a couple different times in chapters 1 through 11, God had commanded the people to multiply and fill the earth. What do the people do? They disobey that command and they try to all come together. And so God does something about it, doesn't he? He confuses their language and he scatters the people. Last week I talked about how we see in Genesis 1 through 11 this chess match, if you will. It's an analogy for thinking about what's taking place between God and humankind throughout this these first few chapters. And a man named Patrick Mead helped me to see this at work. You have God making the first move. He creates the world and he creates humankind. And then you have a move from humankind, don't you? Adam and Eve, they take of the fruits. But God, he counters that move. They're naked. They're ashamed. God provides clothes for them. God banishes them from the garden, yes, but he protects the tree of life, holding out hope for humankind. He doesn't kill them on the spot. He allows them to have children so that the history of humankind will continue on. God makes a move. And Cain kills Abel. God marks Cain, calling him to be a wanderer from this point forward. But God allows Adam and Eve to have another child. So you see God making a counter move. Genesis 6, we see that all the people of the earth had corrupted their ways. God says that he is done with humankind, finished, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. He saves Noah and his family. There's another move on God's part. And now the people build a city that will hopefully reach the heavens in order to make their name great. They disobey God's command to cover the face of the earth. And so humankind, they make another move. And what's God do in response? He moves. God confuses their language and he scatters them over the face of the earth, which was his plan from the beginning. And so you see a counter move from God. I think as we see this move and counter move between God and humanity, there are two main truths that I'd like for us to see this morning. The first is this, is that God is actively engaged with his people. In the church, we see this at work with the Spirit. God works through his Spirit in his people. He's present with us as we seek to obey him and do his will throughout the earth. God is actively engaged with his people. Throughout history, and especially thinking about Moses and during that time, there would have been other gods. People would have worshipped other gods. And the gods that they would have worshipped or recognized were gods that were disengaged from the people. They stood outside of time, outside of place. And people lived in fear of these gods all the time. And what we see with the one true God is it's not that he stands outside and the people have to live in this fear of him just striking them down. But what we see is the God that is actively engaged with his people. He's present with them. He leads them in the ways that they should go. So that's the first thing we see is God is actively engaged with his people. The second is we see grace. In each one of these counter moves by God, we see grace at work. Now, it's important that we note that because for a long time, the idea was that grace was a New Testament concept. Now, the Old Testament was judgment, condemnation, law. Now, as we've been looking at Genesis 1 through 11 and learning more about God, we see that God has been full of grace forever. It's part of who he is. So he continues to work on behalf of his people, even when his people are not faithful to him. God is actively engaged with his people, and he is gracious. We're told that the builders were making this tower so that their name may be recognized throughout the world. And so a question for us, as we think about how the story of the Tower of Babel, how it applies to our lives, I think a question that we ought to ask ourselves is, For whose name are we living? What is our why? Are we self-centered or God-centered? So when I was 16, I worked at a resort on Lake Erie. Now, I know that just sounds wonderful. Oh, it really was a pretty nice place. And I was a bellboy there at this resort. There were several different buildings on the property, and when there weren't guests checking in, they would just have me kind of be a gopher, just go and do whatever needed to be done. The manager would ask me to do things. And there was a pro shop about not even a quarter of a mile away from the lodge. So he asked me to go take something to them. I don't remember what it was. But he said, go ahead and take one of the golf carts over there, and we'll call it, just go do that and then come on back. I don't know what happened in my mind, but I got the keys for that golf cart, and I went over to that pro shop, dropped off what they needed, and from that point forward, instead of going back to the lodge like I should have done, I just had this incredible sense of freedom, and I just took off. I just started driving around the property. On the other side of the lodge, I went around the lodge. On the other side, there was a guy there, and it said, hey, I need to go over to the lake. Will you take me over there? Sure, I'll take you over there. So I went down. They had these sidewalks, these paths, and I went down the path. I dropped him off. Instead of going back to the lodge, I just kept driving. Like I said, I do not know what was happening to me in this moment, but this freedom that I had, I was like, I'm getting paid for this. And so I just kept on driving. I went around the pool area. I was probably gone a solid hour. I get back, and the manager was not happy with me as I see guests lined up, ready to check in, and he's making excuses. I don't know where the bellboy, I don't know. I was like, man, I was just living it up out here. At 16, I was only 16, but at 16, I had this moment of just deep self-centeredness, and I kind of liked it until the manager got a hold of me, and then I recognized the error of my way. But I think there is this self-centeredness within us. We want to do what we think is best for us. We want to live so that our name will be great and will be recognized. In many ways, at least parts of our story are not too different than the story of the Tower of Babel. It's about our reputation, about what people think of us. But in truth, what we are to do is live a God-centered life, a life that is all about Him. And so it's not about our glory, it's about God's glory. It's not about our reputation, but it's about God's reputation. It's not about our name being great, but it's about God's name being great. And so to be God-centered, to go against the grain of what we see in this story in Genesis chapter 11, we pray that God's passion will be our passion. We pray that God's purpose will be our purpose. What brings God joy will bring us joy as well. What makes God sad will make us sad as well. And then we'll pray that God uses us to do something about it. As I was thinking about living a life that is about making the name of the Lord great and not one's own, I thought of the story of Kent Brantley. Probably many of you likely know that name. He was part of a Time magazine, a person of the year in 2015. But in 2014, he was working in Liberia. He was serving patients who had the Ebola virus, and then he contracted the virus himself. Of course, he went there to serve God and to serve the people of Liberia. He didn't recognize or didn't believe that he could end up being one with Ebola virus just like the people he was serving, but it happened. He almost lost his life. Unlike so many that had that terrible disease, Brantley was able to survive. And what he found shortly after he got out of the hospital, finally coming to Emory, the hospital at Emory University in Atlanta, what he found is that everywhere he turned, there were microphones in his face and cameras around him. And so Brantley went to Liberia to serve a few, maybe a few hundred. But what ended up happening is he had people from all over the world watching what he was going to say and do now that he had survived this terrible disease. And so what did he do? He gave credit to God. He spoke powerfully about the name of the Lord and the way that God had saved him and how he had planned to continue to serve God every single day of his life. You see, Brantley, and this is an incredible thing, and I watched interview after interview that he did. He didn't talk about his own goodness, his own righteousness, his own intellectual ability. You see none of that. What you see from this person who ended up becoming a hero in the eyes of Americans is all he cared about was God's glory. It wasn't about his own. And so we go about building towers, don't we? We want to do things that are going to bring us credit and glory, things that will build up our reputation. But this story, it stands as a warning to us all that it's not about us. It's not about being self-centered, but it's about being God-centered. It's about doing things on His terms. And what I believe happens when we live on His terms and do things the way that He desires us to do, especially within the church, is we become powerful witnesses to a better way of life, a better way of doing things. He's the Creator. We are simply made in His image. And so we have the opportunity, the privilege, the blessing of being channels, conduits of His way of working in the world. And like Kent Brantley, we have the opportunity to say, "This is not, it has nothing to do with me, my own intellect, what I've done. This is all about God and about who He is and about what He is up to." So the question is, for whose name are you living? About your own name? About Rob? Or is it about the Lord's name? May the name of the Lord be praised through His people forever and ever. If anybody here today is in need of the prayers of the church family, we are here to pray with you, for you. Daryl is going to lead us in an invitation song here in just a moment. If there's anything on your heart you'd like to share with the congregation this morning, come forward, let us know, and we'll be glad to just walk alongside you. Perhaps today you're ready to give your life over to Jesus Christ in the waters of baptism. We'd be so honored to witness you make that wonderful, faithful decision today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we continue to worship our God.